Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcasts.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily.
All right, welcome in, everybody. It is Sports Daily, and boy, do we have a big show for you. What a weekend in the sports world. A lot to digest, a lot of big-time topics, too, that maybe we didn't see coming. So we'll get to all of it today. It's Jacob Albrockton, TJ Cleland here. We're glad to be with you. We'll have, of course, Chiefs reaction. The Chiefs get it done in overtime against the Colts yesterday. Joshua Briscoe of the Chiefs Radio Network will also be by in the program today to help us get through that. We will have reaction to Chris Kleiman's emotional post-game press conference against Utah. Has a lot of people talking. We'll work on getting that for you and react to it as well. College basketball, a big weekend, including a win for the Shockers again as we begin the tournament weeks this week. KU also played a football game. I think that's what you call it. So we'll have that for you as well. It's all coming for you here on the program, as well as your calls at 869-1240. Your reactions on our video streams on 12 News Connected, YouTube, on X, all kinds of different ways to get in touch with the program. Max Powers here with us as well. We're glad to be here with you. It's all What's on Tap, brought to you by the Wichita Brewing Company, where groups gather for holiday fun, beers with the boys, girls' night out, or a glass of wine with a longtime friend. WBC, the place where groups gather for the holidays. East West, Historic Delano, Wichita Brewing Company, pizza and beer made here. Good morning, TJ. How are you?
Where the hell do we even start today? This show is so full of stuff. Insider's note here. Usually I get out of bed at like really like 6:50. Like we're pushing it to get this thing booted up. Today was one where I woke up at 6:30. Cause like I got to get caffeinated because we got a lot to talk about.
We do have a lot to talk about. The Chiefs, of course, we mentioned 23-20 overtime winners. K-State loses an absolute heartbreaker to Utah. And what is just a wild and crazy game turns into a storyline where the game becomes a little bit secondary because Chris Kleiman, I mean, he broke down in the post game. I don't know how else to describe it. Now, people have different reactions, I suppose, to that, but it brings up some very interesting points and questions. Avery Johnson, we all continue to wait a little bit on, and I think everything comes to a head. So we'll get to all that. I thought the Shockers are really still continuing to look like a team that could do something special. But TJ, I think, you know, and we can have light reactions to everything. The Chiefs getting it done in overtime less than 24 hours ago is where you start on a day that it didn't really look like Chiefs football, but it, who cares, right? We had Sports Sunday last night on KWCH, and like, who cares? If you're a Chiefs fan, who cares about anything other than the fact that they won that game?
It is literally the definition of the fact of if they would have lost that game, you had everything that you wanted to complain about ready and lined up that they gave you throughout the game. And then the fact that they won that game is, okay, well, now I have a list of things that I'm happy about after the game ends. It was literally just like, I mean, like you said, it's ugly, and they won. And they won, though, and it was a big win. So it's, all right, Chiefs look good.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know if it's fair to classify it as ugly. because it's against the Colts, right? And the Colts are one of the league's top teams, if not the league's top team through the first, you know, 10 games at least. And you got it done against them. You look at it, I think there were a couple of things that if you're playing, I don't know, Jacksonville, for instance, in that game where you're like, man, that some of that stuff was annoying. They put up 500 yards against the league's best team. And they, you know, had some big defensive stands. So I don't think there's a lot to complain about in the game. We'll dig into it because it was pretty interesting. I haven't quite figured out yet on the run game side, and this is the thing that a lot of people are talking about, the fact that they ran the ball 36 times with their running backs, but Mahomes dropped back 46 times. So did they change their game plan? Was this a happen chance that this happened? Like,
it is interesting to look at the percentages of where that compares to a normal game, because Mahomes doesn't drop back. I mean, he does a lot, but I mean, that's a big number for him too. So I don't really understand.
Had a ton of plays.
I know. I don't really know why they had so many plays. I guess
because their time of possession almost doubled up Indianapolis.
I was gonna say, probably because they forced 4-3 and outs to end the game from Indianapolis. So they got a chance to run a lot of plays, I would imagine. So,
but it's interesting. We'll dig in. We'll ask Josh Briscoe. Like, I don't know. And that to me is one of the more interesting parts of it. And you look ahead now to a game on Thursday, and man,
I'm terrified about that game.
It is not a great looking matchup, but it is. I mean, the Cowboys are, it's so odd because the Cowboys, you know, came back to beat the Eagles yesterday and they looked dead in the water, and they weren't all of a sudden. They made some improvements on offense, man, and it's showing up the last couple of weeks. It was against the Raiders and then against the Eagles, and now Thursday for Thanksgiving on 12 News and right here on our Odyssey family of networks. However it is that you're able to take it in, they're going to set some ratings records on Thursday. That game is going to be high profile. Awesome.
I'm very glad that it is not the noon game to not interfere with the Cleveland family Thanksgiving, because there would be some discourse screaming in the house that day. So we have time to where we can watch the football, take the nap, go back for seconds, and then the Chiefs are on that night.
We have
Jacob, we haven't even talked about the lead of the show today. The Jacksonville Jaguars find ways to screw the Chiefs again.
God, don't even get me started. That'll be a part of the Chiefs discussion, because it was a non-moving day.
It was right there.
It was right there. I actually liked Arizona in that game. I liked Arizona to cover, which they did, but I liked Arizona in that game. Jacksonville is they're a cat, right? Nine lives. Like, they just keep finding ways to survive. Credit to them. I mean, they deserve credit for it, but man, that is an annoying loss if you're a Chiefs fan, or win, I suppose, non-loss if you're a Chiefs fan there. Elsewhere around the league too. And we'll get into all of this today, just some outcomes that don't really move the needle for the Chiefs. But at the same time, if they don't find a way to beat the Colts, there were daggers thrown yesterday potentially out there for the Chiefs. Like, they would have been in big trouble had they not figured out a way to win that game. This is what it's probably going to be like the rest of the way, by the way. Like, the Chiefs are going to play a tough schedule. They do have a couple of cupcakes in there, but most of the time it's, you know, butthole puckered, crazy butt puckering, just intense moments of like, there's just so little wiggle room because of these tiebreakers for them right now.
I really want to talk to Josh Briscoe about it, because we talked about it yesterday, is that we said if there's a game that the Chiefs could probably lose, it's probably the Colts game. And now looking back in hindsight, it's like, if they lost that game, they might have been really screwed. Like, it's a good thing they won that game.
Yep, they would have been trouble, because the reason that gets brought up is because it doesn't affect anything head to head, really.
Yeah.
But man, it wasn't nothing. They gained a game on Buffalo, and they gained a half game on the Chargers, so it wasn't a non-movement. But we don't expect Buffalo to be, and maybe we should now after they lose again. It doesn't feel like Buffalo's the team that they'll chase down.
We said 6-1 through the final seven. It might need to be 7-0. Like, it's going to be real scary.
We could get to that point. We're not there yet. We still got a lot of games to play. Let's talk about the game specifically tomorrow. How'd they get it done? What do we take away from it? Reaction to the Chiefs. Max will work on getting that Chris Kleiman audio for you if you haven't heard it yet. We'll try and play it for you before we react to it. It's pretty intense stuff. That's all coming here on Sports Daily. Thanks to Prairie Fire Coffee. Happy Thanksgiving week, everybody. We're coming right back.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
I haven't got all day.
869-1240.
Time to get busy.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
Sports Talk on KFH, presented by Paramount Plus. Count on Sundays all season long with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Of course, on 12 News Connected. Welcome back in, everybody. It is Jacob Albrock, TJ Cleveland here. Max Power producing on a Reaction Monday. Here we go. It is a Monday of Thanksgiving week. It is a quick turnaround and a quick reaction for the Kansas City Chiefs, who will play again on Thursday, hit the road on Thursday, and go down to Dallas, to Jerry World, to take on a Cowboys team who is playing much better, who's also playing for their playoff lives. That is going to be an awesome game. In fact, all three games on Thursday.
Can they make the playoffs?
Pretty darn good. Who, the Cowboys?
Yeah, where are they at?
Yeah, they're in it.
Is it realistic? Sure. Is it realistic that they make the playoffs?
Yeah, they're right now. I think they're in 10th. They're exactly where the Chiefs are. 5-5-1, 5-5-1, chasing. I mean, look, the NFL this year is absolutely absurd. You've got the Lions are on the outside looking in. In the NFC, it's just. Here we go, right? How is their path in San Francisco 7-4? It's wild. What a wild year. I guess this is probably how it always looks. I think 10 or 11 games in, I think it's just a little upside down from what we expected as far as some of the teams, like Detroit, Kansas City. How many people out there like Detroit, Kansas City is very much a Super Bowl we could see. What is that? What kind of odds do you get on Detroit, Kansas City right now in the Super Bowl?
No.
Right? And so it's a wild year. and two teams playing for their playoff lives are going to battle it out Thursday. We'll get to that later in the week, maybe a little bit with Joshua Briscoe. Let's talk about the Chiefs getting to 6-5 with the overtime win, 23-20 over the Colts. It was slow going for Kansas City in this game. They were down 24-9. Is that right? 20-9. And just found a way in the fourth quarter. It was a game they dominated time of possession. They ran about a billion plays, which is fine, right? The Colts are really good. I told you last night, like, the defense to me stands out big time in this game. And I know the running game and all that stuff is what everyone wants to talk about. But the fact that that offense, they held in check, held to 20 points, and did a lot of it in the second half, like, that to me was the really impressive part of that game for Kansas City.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that they went four straight series, the Colts went four straight series of three and outs. Like, that's something that I said last night to you, is the fact that it doesn't matter what the offense does. If you can hold another team to 12 straight plays, basically, and four punts, like, that is unreal that they did that against one of the best offenses in the entire league as well. So I do think that was the reason that they really did win the game. And
what is
So,
I mean, the Colts come into that, and the Colts are good. And so are the Chiefs. Like, the Chiefs are good, but make a lot of mistakes right now. That's very clearly what's going on with them. They're just making a lot of mistakes. They're a good team. They're a talented team, and they love to shoot themselves in the foot. That's kind of what they do right now. So the defense had to step up in that way and bail out the offense from shooting itself in the foot in a lot of ways. They continue to miss throws. They continue to drop balls, and they continue to have penalties. And look, they got to 23 points. By the way, the Colts have had a good defense this year too. The Chiefs, you know, ran the ball effectively like that against a team that had been really good against the run this year. And the Chiefs deserve a lot of credit for it. The coaches deserve a lot of credit. You know, you dominate time of possession in a game like that against an offense like that because you keep them off the field. A part of the way you do that is you run the ball. That's a very football 101 sentiment, but it's not something that the Chiefs do all that often, right? Often they might try to do the same thing through a short passing game, but that gets a little trickier because, of course, an incomplete pass stops the clock. So I also think that Andy Reid and the coaches deserve a lot of credit for turning around and handing the ball off 36 times to running backs yesterday. It wasn't pretty. It wasn't luxurious. It was old school, 3 yards in a cloud of dust football, and it's what they needed at the moment, and I give them credit for doing it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big deal because, you know, we've talked about for weeks the fact of, like, why can't they do this whenever things aren't going the way that they want them to. And, you know, you think back to, I can't remember what game it exactly was, the Bills game, Mahomes went less than 50% throw it and passing, and they didn't adjust. Well, they were also losing and needed to come back as well. You can make that argument, but the fact that this has happened for, you know, 3 or 4 years plus.
Whatever. Last year they ran the ball, to be fair to them.
Not like sometimes they didn't, though. I mean,
at the end of the year, they were running it 22 to 25 times. It's the most they've run it in the Mahomes era. But they had to because their line was terrible.
Yeah.
Like they finally got to the point last year where they didn't have a choice. They've had a choice this year.
I think that turns into the conversation about, like, was this something that they were just like, guys, like, what the hell is going, like, we have to change something.
I don't know. I wish I knew the answer to that, if it was the plan coming in or if it developed into the plan during the game. Well, that's a question we'll ask Joshua Briscoe, because I do think that's a really interesting question. Did they plan on doing it, or did they just do it because it was where it's like, look, it's like you've got a Lambo in the garage, but instead you decide to drive around in the Ford Taurus, right? That big shiny thing sitting there, you can take it out anytime, but sometimes you just need to take out the Taurus, you know, sometimes save a little gas.
The Lambo's got the check engine light on right now.
It does. And that's and that is a part of it. That is a part of it, you know, but it's, they have this, they have all of these weapons. They have Mahomes. They have a line that's been able to block it up when it's all together. Now, Trey Smith injury is
very significant. Significant to trying to run the ball, maybe even more so. But you've got all of those things in place. But in this particular instance, yeah, the check engine light was on. Go hop in the Taurus and take that thing out.
I feel like Kareem Hunt needs a better analogy than a Taurus.
I feel like I don't know, man. Just get the job done. It's just coming from a guy who drove
a Dodge Ram.
Who drove a Taurus for like, I don't know, 7-8 years. Yeah. Just gets the job done.
Kareem Hunt might be a diesel truck. Not the fastest, but man,
I don't know, man. A diesel usually has that top speed. I don't know.
We'll call it like a 1990 F-150.
Yeah, okay, fine.
That's the analogy.
He moves forward. Look, he's been incredible in short yardage this year. It has been awesome to watch, but he is averaging 3.5 yards a carry, which is well below like what would be league average. But he does so many things well for them. I've said a million times, they're so lucky to have found this last year because he pass blocks. He does all the little things. He knows the plays. He doesn't typically make mistakes, although that fumble yesterday. But like he's just old reliable.
Yeah.
He's not shiny at all.
I wonder when you look at this, this would be a fun experiment, but I have no idea how to even start this. Is he averages whatever 3.5 yards per carry, basically. I wonder what his like median rush is compared to the rest of the league, because he never goes backwards. Like I don't think recall him ever getting tackled for loss.
He doesn't go backwards and he doesn't break big ones off tip. I think he had an 18-yarder yesterday, which is his so it's generally it's like, you know what he reminds me of? If this is a Cowboys analogy, if you watched Ezekiel Elliott, not in the very last years, but maybe like 2-3 years before he was done. I would Zeke never didn't gain 2-3 yards. Like he could fall. He had this wonderful ability to fall forward and always gain yards. No matter what the situation was, he would find a way to turn it into like a 3-yard gain. And that's what Kareem Hunt's doing. Kareem Hunt had a fourth quarter fumble yesterday. At the 28 yard line, like it was not a good play, like it was a bad play, and it was okay. Like they kept going back to him. It's one of the few mistakes he's even made, but he's never gonna like wow you, where you're like, oh my goodness, look at the game Kareem Hunt just had. Yeah, this was the biggest numbers game he's had.
Yeah, the fumble yesterday, I was digging through the highlights, getting stuff ready for TV purposes, and the fourth quarter was so long, I forgot that play happened in the fourth quarter while they were down by 11 points. Like, in the moment, I was like, it's over. The game's over. The Kansas City Chiefs lost that football game.
He hasn't made those mistakes. Like, he's just been clutch, I guess is what I don't even know what you call it. He's been there when they've had to have him. And I'm glad they have him, because yesterday he took on I don't know if it was the plan, but all of a sudden you turn around and you're like, man, he's carried the ball 30 times. Like, what on earth is going on here?
It is so funny. The fact that he had the most carries of his entire career, and then 2 hours later, they're like, yeah, we should probably bring in another running back.
Yeah, we're going to go get Dameon Pierce.
We're going to let him sleep in tomorrow morning.
Yeah, they got some reinforcements. That's probably also not a good sign for, the return of what you'd hope would be, a healthy backfield. But Isaiah Pacheco, we'll see. Maybe it's just insurance. Pierce was recently let go by the Texans, which I don't have big expectations for Pierce. I think you're right. I think it's, man, Hunt just carried the ball 30 times.
I think it's the fact that they have a game on Thursday is the fact.
The reality is, though, and this is what's so interesting about the idea of 30 carries, the same ideas will be in place. Dallas is a great run defense and not a good pass defense. However, they also have a high-powered, high-octane offense that you'd love to keep off the field. So it's a really interesting turnaround to this game, because it's a lot like Indianapolis, right? You want to keep Dallas off the field, but it's really hard to run against them. But that's where you kind of get into Kareem Hunt's game. It's hard for Saquon Barkley to run off of them, Mr. Boomer Bust, But is it hard for 3 yards in a cloud of dust, Kareem Hunt, the old Ford Taurus or Ford F-150? Like, is it, or is that exactly what he's going to do no matter who he's going up against? And you just chip away that way. It will be interesting. My guess is they'll be pretty tempted to try to throw it on a pretty bad secondary, and they'll get after it that way, at least early. But it will be an interesting one.
Does the pass rush scare you?
Not as much as the run defense, but they're better. Dallas is just better defensively because they made a trade for two good defenders and got one of their best defenders back from injury. And all of a sudden, one of the worst defenses we've ever seen got healthy and an injection of talent, and they're pretty good. At least they have been through the two games that they've had these new pieces. I mean, they've got the best pair of defensive tackles probably now in football. That's coming right up the middle. That's not typically been a pass rushing pair, but Trey Smith's out of this game. And so if that pressure comes up the middle on Mahomes, that's a big problem. It's a big, big problem. I don't think it will. It doesn't typically do that. That's not typically what they do. As far as Quinnen Williams and what's his face they got in the Green Bay trade. Like, they don't, they're run stuffers. Like, it's going to be tough on Kareem Hunt. And I think the Chiefs will throw it. And again, the Chiefs threw it in this game. Mahomes threw it 46 times. It's not like they abandoned the pass. They just ran a buttload of plays in this game.
Hey, I give him his credit still. Last year, if this was last year in October, Andy Reid would have had Mahomes throw that ball 65 times probably.
Not in October, he wouldn't have. They were running the ball last year in October.
No, they were not. I remember covering a game.
Okay.
Covering a game where they handed the ball off five times.
Not late in the year. What month? October, maybe.
I'm telling you, October.
Okay. I mean, not that many weeks ago this year, he'd have done it.
Yeah.
That's not something that they do. That they're just, they throw the ball. And again, they threw the ball yesterday too. You know, like it wasn't like they abandoned the pass. That's what I can't figure out with yesterday's game. They get it done in overtime against the Colts. Rashee Rice had a nice game, a nice little return game. I think they're funneling things more than I thought they would. It has become very much a Rice Kelce worthy offense. Everything seems to be going to those guys. By the way, bettors, that has been, if you ever do same game parlays, those three and just some nice little yardage hits have been pretty automatic for Kansas City. I think Mahomes is still missing some throws though, TJ, and that surprised me a little bit at home. And I don't know where that's coming from. He seems a little less inclined to just plant in the pocket and make those throws. I don't know if that's a result of a couple of games that Josh Simmons list. I'm not sure where that's coming from, but he still just seems like he's just a fraction off right now.
I mean, that's what I was saying about the fact of if they didn't win the game, you had your talking points ready about what was going wrong. And Patrick Mahomes was kind of one of them. He ended up with 350 yards. But, I mean, there was – if you watched the game, I mean, there was – the missed throws were to wide open receivers. Like, would have been major turning points. Like, it's weird. I don't really know what's going on. And I do think that that's part of it, is the fact of the thought of being sacked keeps creeping back because the offensive line hasn't been as good as it was. And that speeds up the internal clock a little bit.
Maybe.
And, you know, I don't know what it is, but they figured it out. By the time they got to overtime, it looked like a calm down version of Mahomes. Did you think of the big pass to Worthy and the one to Rice? Like, that's what it usually looks like.
It was better, too. I will say it was definitely better than it was, the game prior. He looked better than he did against the Broncos.
Yeah.
He just, there was another deep ball. Deep ball's not, you know, we love Mahomes because he's got that arm. But right now, that's just not been clicking for really the last 2 years. A lot of those deep, just absolute go routes. And the Chiefs have had opportunities for it. They have the players for it, but it's not really what they're doing right now. And that's okay. Because they've mastered this underneath stuff. It's just, I do think he finds it in the next couple of weeks. He'll find that gear. He's going to be fired up for this game in Dallas. That's you know, back home for him. Like,
have they played? When's the last time they played in Dallas?
That's a good question.
I don't remember when since I've at least covered the team. It's been a long time.
They played them once, I know, in Kansas City.
Yeah. I'll find it faster than
7-5. I'd have to look up some stuff on that. You try to do a quick search and
2017.
2017. It's pulling up that the Chiefs used to live in Dallas. But yeah, 2017. So it's one of those rarities. It's a Thanksgiving day. We'll all be looking for it. It's going to be fun. We'll have more on the game throughout the week, obviously, but I am worried. I am pretty worried about
the
matchup.
Here's a stat for you. Last time the Chiefs won at the Cowboys, pick a year. What do you think?
Oh, boy.
1975.
Woof. Oh, boy. It's going to be good. Man, it's going to be good. I can't wait for it. That game's going to be so, so fun. So fun. All right, TJ. Max has got it for us. Just to sort of set the table, and I know this happened to a lot of people because it, you know, kind of ended late. Maybe you weren't paying attention after, and then you get into the Sunday routine, you're going to church, getting ready for a Chiefs game, all these things. If you missed it, there was quite a moment after the K-State loss to Utah. Heartbreaking 51-47 loss. The Cats, pretty inspired effort out there in Salt Lake, couldn't get it done at the end, but a really nice effort. But here's Chris Klieman after the game, and we'll let you listen first, and then we'll react to it a little bit.
Heartbroken for the kids and for the loss. But it's one of the greatest efforts I've been a part of. One of the greatest efforts I've been a part of as a coach. And it's hard to say this because we lost the game. We're down so many players. And I know a lot of people thought we'd come over here and lay down. And that maybe the kids had cashed it in, because I've heard it enough. I've cashed it in. I've heard the players have cashed it in. We need to get new leadership here. We need to get new players, new coaches. I'm tired of it. I got to be honest with you. I'm tired of it. I've given my friggin' ass life for this place for 7 years. I've given everything for 7 years. And I think I deserve a little bit of respect. I'm frustrated like everybody else is, but I love those kids. I'm going to go friggin' battle with those kids any day. That's a top 10 team in the country, one of the best offenses in the country, and one of the best defenses in the country that we rushed for 472 yards on. Because we told the guys we were going to commit to running the football. And we told the guys that buy into it, believe in it, we are running the football against these guys because nobody's tried it like we're going to try it. And the kids bought into it. Kids don't buy into it if they've given in. Kids don't buy into it if they're half foot out the door. Our kids bought into it. And we stuffed it down their throat the entire game running the football. And we lost. And I'm crushed because of that. But I'm going to stand up here with friggin' pride and say we've battled our ass off against a really good team. I'm crushed we lost the football game, but I'm more upset with
we'll take it there, Max. That mumble there you heard was Gene Taylor, the athletic director, coming up and saying, you're not going anywhere. I was worried we wouldn't be able to, it'd be hard for radio to hear that, but that's what that was. It was that ending part there that you heard was, you know, Klieman breaking down a little bit, Gene Taylor coming up saying, you're not going anywhere, which is important context of the conversation. But you can hear, obviously, emotion. Klieman is not, you know, he's having a moment here with this year, as K-State fans are too. I was pretty surprised, not surprised to get the emotional reaction. That is a brutal loss. Like that sucks that they weren't able to hang on there, but nobody gave him a chance. I think, you know, if you're a K-State fan, yeah, it stings, but ultimately it's going to be a difference in a game, or, you know, maybe, I don't know, sixth place instead of ninth place in the Big 12, whatever it ends up being. But that was a tough moment there. So we'll get that for you. We'll let you react to it. We're going to make a quick pivot here because we have Shocker head coach Paul Mills.
Oh,
now, Coach, we didn't know if you'd be able to make it with your travel schedule here for the holiday season. Well, that's, as a coach, like, you hear, I don't know how much of that you heard or how much of it you've seen. That's hard, man. That is a hard moment after a game. Sometimes I'm like, man, I don't know how you guys get up there and sit there and listen to us ask you questions after you're just devastated from a loss like that.
Well, a couple of things when I was listening to Coach Kleinman. One, he didn't want to say freaking, I think he said. he's like, all right.
Friggin' A life.
Yeah, I'm in front of people right now, so I need to be really cautious. And then the second thing is, I do think for 99% of all coaches, they genuinely love their players, and they want to see those guys succeed. And I've always told our teams that it is a player's job to love each other. It is a coach's job to love them all. And so it that needs to show up. It doesn't need to be in words. It needs to be in actions. But I trust me, every coach goes through that. And there are depths that we sink to after tough losses that I totally sympathize with.
I think that we heard the story last year, Coach, of you scratching your face while you slept, I think was one that you brought out for us and stuff like that. So we understand that you're feeling something like that as well in the past. Talking about tough. The Shockers this week, you guys kind of faced your first real adversity of the year. You know, you go into a tough place in Boise, and then you have you're trailing at halftime to Milwaukee. Just kind of what have you seen from the team that this week that you hadn't seen prior?
Yeah, you know, you're going to have to weather storms, and there's going to be some bumps along the road. And I think that, again, stylistically, every team presents different challenges, and you're kind of seeing different things that teams are doing and how we need to counter what's going on. It's why teams try to play, home games, especially in the month of November, and try to get a feel for what's happening and how are we making decisions during the course of the year. So I think Boise and Milwaukee, similar, they play different styles, but to the same degree, they really wanted to get out on shooters. And, you know, you have a 10-3-point game against Prairie View A&M. You have a 16-3-point game, 16 threes against Loyola. And then these other teams have like, listen, we're not going to let you get those kind of looks beyond the arc. So I think, you know, it's an adjustment kind of learning. It's always, you know, it's hard to win on the road. We understood that. And you go back, you look at the film, here's where we need to tighten up, but was proud of how we responded, you know, being down at half the other day, and then at the same time, how we responded from the Boise State game.
Coach, as I'm watching Milwaukee, and there was that stretch in the first half where the offense wasn't coming as easily, that stuff feels like, I don't know, you can tell me if this is crazy, but it feels like it helps you when that happens, right? When those threes aren't coming, because we all know there will be lots of times this year where they're not, but it looks to me like you've got a lot of guys who are very comfortable attacking the basket and trying to get to the free throw line.
Yeah, you know, it turns into a 3-on-3 game, and if you eliminate four other guys simply because of the spacing on the floor and how teams want to defend, it's, you know what, if they want to play 3-on-3, we need to play 3-on-3. And I think, obviously, Mike gets a lot of attention. Kenyon Giles gets a lot of attention because of their ability to shoot. What made that game different than necessarily Boise State was the fact that they were changing ball screen coverages based on personnel. And to be honest with you, it's really impressive that some teams are able to do that simply because you've been practicing a certain way. They hadn't shown that ball screen coverage the entire year, but the way that they were approaching it, and I thought, again, our guys made adjustments at halftime, and we got a lot cleaner in the way that we did things. But you have to kind of go through that a little bit. I'm glad that we were able to work it out and then only end up down two at the half, and then being able to get catch fire late and give us some opportunities. But I think that's where we have a ton of value, is we have strength in numbers. We have better depth than what I had here the two previous years. And it kind of allows us to just throw different bodies. And we've been able to get some separations in games, whether it be UNC Asheville or the other night against Milwaukee late.
Coach, you know, we didn't think you were going to get you on the radio show this morning because we thought you'd be on a beach in the Bahamas already, camped out somewhere out there.
We get there at 7 o'clock-ish tonight. So
there you go. A little sunset on the beach, I guess. What do you go into this tournament like? You know, obviously this is one of the ones that had been a premier tournament in college basketball in the past. You know, how did this come about, you know, for you? When did it get on your desk? And how big of a deal is it the Shockers are playing in it?
Yeah, I remember, you know, I was there last in 2016, and it's just a wonderful tournament. Just did a phenomenal job. And I remember Wichita State being there, Michigan State. And if you go look at it, and, you know, we're KenPom top 90 team in the country. And I think we're ranked next to last of all the teams that are there. And just in regards, so, I mean, when you have six other teams that are ranked ahead of you, you kind of understand that this is the way this works. You know, these are resume potential tournaments, and you have the potential to kind of build up a resume and get in conversations that you want to be in. And so this is, you know, everybody's heard how cliche it is to say these are business trips. And you're approaching it the right way. I think our players understand, and we're in for a really tall task out the jump on a nationally televised game there on Wednesday. So we're really excited.
Everybody knows about St. Mary's. They've been a tournament mainstay over the past few years. There's a lot of good teams in this tournament. You guys will then be back home against Mount Marty on December 2nd. Now, Coach, a little personal anecdote. I've told TJ this. So I'm there against Milwaukee. Up in the stands, I'm with 10-year-old girls.
Oh, man.
Now, you probably couldn't hear the chants, but my wife and I are sitting there, and there's a chant beginning, 4 more baskets, 3 more. And so they're counting down. We're like, what on earth are they doing? I don't know how much you're aware of the 6-7 craze among young people. They were counting you guys down to 67. You got to 65 and hit a 3. And I don't know if you heard a collective groan.
Ruined it.
So against Mount Marty, when you're said, just keep in mind, you'll get the loudest pop of the year if you guys can hit 67 on the button. Every kid under 13 in there is going to go ballistic if you can get it done.
I've seen some other teams who've done this. I've seen the scream games where everybody invites a local elementary as a field day trip. And I've seen teams do it. Like, if you can do it at the free throw line, I think you may have fans for the rest of your life. This trend will probably play out here in the next 3 months. And so we need to capitalize on it while we can.
Tell Kevin Saul we need to get some butts and seats.
We need like all the lights to go, you know, and all of those things. Safe travels to the Bahamas.
That would make Sports Center.
Yeah, it will. Safe travels to the Bahamas, Coach. Let's see if we can get a couple wins out there. We're excited to watch this week as we're stuck.
Let's get three.
Sounds good. We'll count on it.
Thanks,
Paul
guys.
Mills, Wichita State head coach. Thanks for stopping by. They will hit the road today. We'll come back. We'll react to that. More on Chris Kleiman. Josh Briscoe joins us in the next hour. We're jam-packed here on a Monday. Come right back. And we welcome you back in for another hour of Sports Daily. Jacob Albrock, TJ Cleland here. Max Power producing. We've got your KFH hotline at 869-1240. We'll take your video comments on YouTube, X. Thanks for watching us on 12 News Connected. Thanks for listening to us on the Odyssey app. We are an abbreviated week for us. We'll be with you Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday this week, and then that's it. And then we will not have us Thursday or Friday, enjoying some time with the family and the holidays. So There's that programming note. We have Joshua Briscoe coming up here in just a few minutes. It's What's on Tap, brought to you by Wichita Brewing Company, now featuring a Christmas cocktail menu. Dazzle your date with a stockings and snowfall. Make merry with a mistletoe mint or gather the girls for a pumped espresso martini. The Christmas cocktail menu now available at Wichita Brewing Company, where groups gather for the holiday season. We get here, thanks to Paul Mills for stopping by for just a few minutes. We thought Paul would be in the air, but he was able to sneak in here and get us some commentary on the Shockers, which we'll get back to later in this hour.
That's some Sports Daily exclusive. What does the Wichita State head coach think about Chris Klein?
Yeah, that was quick. But we'll react to the Shockers in college basketball here a little bit later in this hour. Speaking of Chris Klieman, TJ, we played you the audio last segment. Very emotional after the Utah game. I think it has kind of reached a fever pitch, and obviously the outcome of that game and the way in which they lost it, you know, played into it. I can't imagine being as proud as he must have been of them for that effort. A lot of the things he said are true. They have been ravaged by injury this year, and it has been a wildly disappointing season, and people have been calling for it. I think it's true that he probably does deserve a little more respect, even though that's probably not something you come out and say, but we're all human. I don't have a problem with it. I think Gene Taylor's part in that is probably as big of a news making item as anything, because it's like we're not moving off of Chris Klieman. And I said this last night, TJ, and I'll say it again, and I've said it here all year long. It is crazy to me to be having any conversations about Chris Kleiman's future at K-State. And I know the Big 12 finishes haven't been where fans have wanted them, but the reality is, coming into this year, they've won 28 games at Kansas State. It will, no matter how it finishes, be a disappointing year this year. And the Big 12 standings will have gone fourth, eighth, and whatever it ends up this year. And that's not okay. But that's not okay in the small view. Yeah. In the big view, Chris Kleiman's time at K-State has been wildly, in my opinion, successful, and exactly what you hope for out of K-State football.
Yeah. I mean, as we've said on the show, like, it's not worth our real entertaining for the fact of, is it time? You know, like, we've never done that because it's an insane thing to think about. Like, I think I said that back whenever, like, the Army loss, if people started hold on, what's going on with the coaches? I said that they would literally have to lose every single Big 12 game in, like, Oklahoma State fashion for him to get fired. Like, it would take a lot. And I think that, like, if they did this again next year, I still don't think that they would do it. I think that it would literally take a 3-win season at the baseline, probably, for something to happen of that nature, unless it's like you miss a bowl game 5 years in a row or something.
I don't want to look that far ahead, because I think there could be some heat at the end of next year if you had a repeat performance, only because we could very well be looking at losing Avery Johnson and him being wildly successful somewhere else. Like, there are other things. And I also think, by the way, that we saw Avery Johnson's kind of 1 week at a time comment or whatever this week. That, I think that probably is also weighing on Chris Klieman and Dylan Edwards leaving. And there is a new stress involved in this profession, which is probably one of the most stressful anyway. This is now a new stress to have to also recruit the players you already have every year. I think injuries have been very unfortunate this year. I think they have had an interesting experience with assistant coaches over the years. K-State trying to get the right fit, they've lost a lot of them. Trying to replace them has been difficult. But the results on the field, and I think this is where, and K-State fans can get mad at me for this, but I firmly believe it. Like, if 8 wins, 9 wins, and top half of the Big 12 finishes almost always with chances to win a Big 12 title, let's say every 3 or 4 years, like, if that's not good enough, then your expectations are all. I just don't think it's ever going to be better than that for a lot of reasons. One, that's not the way the Big 12 is designed. That's the way every team in the Big 12 is, basically, all the good ones anyway. Like, it's going to be sort of a cycle of these things, unless somebody comes up and does like what Tech has done this year or TCU did a few years ago. Unless there's a way a team does that every year, that's going to be the way it is in the Big 12. And it makes it a lot of fun, you know, from a big picture perspective. But if you're going to get frustrated at 8 and 9 wins and bowl games and every handful of years a chance to be in the playoff, that's as good as it's going to get. It's like that's reality. And you've got a coach who sort of lives the way the program has been built out. Like that's sort of his DNA. He's been willing to stay and not leave when he's probably had opportunities to do so. And he's recruiting at a really high level. Yeah. So like you're getting all these wins. Like if you were to go find a new coach, you would literally hope that new coach can come in and do all the things that Chris Klieman is doing.
It's true. Listen, I don't want to get too deep in the weeds because we agree on that. What is the status of it's a major story that your coach is fighting back tears at a press conference and the AD comes up to console. What's the stance on that? Like, I don't remember that ever happening, that a coach can't get the outside of, Max Duggan. I remember that one, the TCU quarterback, not the coach. But
it happens. You mean the tears part? I mean, coaches lose their minds in postgame press conferences constantly. Yeah,
but this wasn't I think I like the Brian Kelly meltdowns and stuff like that, where he's screaming and everything like that. Like,
I'm a man, I'm 40. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, there's breakdowns and stuff like that. But I mean, that the fact that, you know, it's like a broken down, like, that's the only way to say it, is that the bubble finally popped. And
finally popped. I think the circumstances of that game specifically and how impressive it was that as 17.5-point underdogs with all the injuries and everything that they've got going right now, that they were able to come in and get that close, but then also getting that close and not finishing.
Yeah.
And I do think, just my opinion, I have no insight to any of this, but I do think things like Avery having a lingering decision that'll have to be made, that kind of stuff is draining stuff.
The thing that's the biggest story about all of this stuff is there's fans that this is where the coaches speak to the fans, and there's K-State fans that are
It is.
It's interesting because they're like, well, our coach is doing that. Like I'm with Klieman here. Like everything that he said is correct. You just can't say that on that kind of platform. And there's a reason that coaches don't say that on that kind of platform.
I don't want to say you can't because he did.
You're going to be a top story when you do.
You're going to be. And I don't think, obviously, that wasn't his intention. I don't think he walked into that room. But you've got to imagine. You've just gone through that emotional experience and you sit down in front of a bunch of nerds like us who are about to ask you about your decision to go for two. Like they have that have not been in a practice, have no idea what went into the preparation, have no idea into the psychology of your team. You just experienced that. You've been dealing with donors in your ear all week. You go sit down and you see some guy with a notepad saying, coach, what can you walk us through the decision to get Guilford on two there? And, if you didn't do that, it would at some point, right? Like we're human and a lot of us would want to jump across the room and punch that person in the face. Like it takes a lot of restraint most of the time, I think, to have to do. It's a part of the job. And I'm not saying that question shouldn't be asked. Of course it should be asked. It should 100% be asked. That's our job, to wade through that obvious discomfort and ask the question that every fan wants to know.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean the coach is going to be happy to answer it. They're going to be pissed. They're already pissed that they lost the game. There's a million reasons he's pissed and emotional anyway. And for a moment there, like he just couldn't power through it. That's it. I think that's all it is. But now you have to deal with now you got to come in today and do another one. And I'm sure he'll say something I'm sorry and all that stuff.
Yeah. I know. It's just such a big, the fact that your AD goes up. And I mean, if I'm Gene Taylor, I'm doing the same thing too. Like I'm not throwing any, I'm not casting.
Well,
any
you are, if you, you are, if you believe what he said. And of course he does. And that's the news that comes out of that whole thing for me.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, that is the one definite thing that we could say. Hey, Gene Taylor says that Chris Klieman will be back next year, and that said it on a press conference stage right there.
And so end of that, they've got a boatload of work to do this offseason. Both of these football teams do. It is going to be an uneasy offseason.
I've been crying wolf for a while. I want to put that out there.
Yeah, it's gonna be rough. We'll come back. We've got Joshua Briscoe. We've got more. We'll react to that more throughout the week. We'll get Klieman again today. That we'll have it. But we're gonna talk a little Chiefs when we return. Don't go away.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. You bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Dude, you gotta hear this.
Go ahead. I think I want to hear this.
Sports Daily is on KFH. And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
Let's jump right in with Joshua Briscoe here. Josh, I don't know about you, but before we dig in, I think it's, at least for us, it's kind of been like a who cares. They figured out to win a game close. Take it, because it hasn't. That's the first time this year they've been able to do that.
Yeah, and I think that was, for me, one of the biggest takeaways, and it ended up being my like final thought on the post-game show last night. I was feeling poetic and, among other things, relieved, I think. And that was the final thought, was, hey, we know that this Kansas City Chiefs team, or very similar versions of this Kansas City Chiefs team, could do this. They have done this. They did it, by the one possession game metric, like a dozen times last year. They've probably done it dozens of times over the Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes era, but we had a legitimate question and reason to doubt. Can they do it now? Can this team do what we saw them do against Indy? I think a lot of the other underlying things from that game are also encouraging, but the most encouraging thing, and the thing that you absolutely had to have, was you're going to have opportunities here to take this game back after giving it away a couple of times, and they did that. Therefore, the season's in a relatively healthy place today, instead of us talking about this team having no margin for error and really being on life support for 2025.
Yeah, Josh, we were talking about we said, you know, heading into the week is they probably needed to go 6-1 through the final seven, and then the way the NFL played out yesterday, we're like, we might have to be 7-0. It's going to be really stressful the way that this is going to look, the way that it's heading that way. From what you saw from the team on the field yesterday, did your panic meter move at all, or are you still in the same spot? Do you feel better about the team, better about the situation? Where are you at with that?
Yeah, I do, and I think I definitely felt significant. I mean, I feel significantly better now than I felt at halftime yesterday, where like the arrow was pointing in the wrong direction from that RPO interception.
The fourth quarter, yeah.
Yeah. There were plenty of times yesterday where you would have not gotten the most optimistic version of me. That the early interception, the Kareem Hunt fumble. I mean, the Hunt fumble, I checked Twitter. There were a lot of people going, okay, well, it's been fun. Let's, you know, when does the draft guide come out? And I understand why. That felt like it could have been a death blow. And that this Chiefs team, again, this 2025 iteration, they haven't really come back from one of those moments, at least not in this later act of the season when everything really tightened up. And certainly with the Broncos and Bills games, like, again, not putting you in the dirt, but putting you in a very, very difficult position. So, I do feel better about a whole bunch of things. I think that the other thing about it, and we've talked about this for weeks now, and it was true for the Bills and the Broncos, and it was true over the bye, and it'll be true after whatever happens on Thanksgiving. This team is better than 500 in a lot of ways that would make sense. If you simulated this season 100 times, I think the Chiefs are making the playoffs like 90 of those times, perhaps. But that's the other thing where you look around the NFL and like going back even to Thursday Night Football with Texans Bills. I didn't think Davis Mills was going 3-0 in his game starting with the Texans, and that's much more about the defense and the pass rush than it is about Davis Mills, of course. But like, well, now you have to consider that the Texans are actually a contender here. The Jags seemed like they really wanted to give that away, and it would have been nice, of course, for them to lose that game. But then the week prior, you look at Jags Chargers, and you go, well, probably not going to see both of those teams holding on down the stretch, and obviously the Chargers and Broncos both on bye this week, but you ask, well, can the Chargers hold their line? And that's the place where the Chiefs are now, by winning this game against the Colts. If they keep winning, and if they win out, they're going to be fine. They're going to end up making, if they run the table, I mean, mathematically it might be a guarantee, but functionally I believe it firmly. If you don't lose again, you'll be in the dance, and then you'll figure it out from there, and then now we're talking about the Chiefs doing it from a wild card spot, which could be kind of fun if they get there. Of course, if they fall short, it won't be any fun at all.
12-5 will get there. You'd like to think that 11-6 would.
I think so.
Man, I got like what we're seeing here at Dallas, Houston, you mentioned, the Chargers, the Broncos. We assume they'll beat the Titans and the Raiders, although those are both road games. But that's like I think they'll be favored in all the games. The idea of this team winning all of them seems like a big ask. So
yeah,
will there be wiggle room for a loss? I still think there will be, but it's hard to see it right now.
Yeah, I do agree, though, and I think you just – and you guys are also paying attention to the whole league, obviously, but this is like something that I text friends and family when I get the exasperated texts at halftime and after the game. And I think the one thing that I have like told my brother a number of times, who just rides the emotional waves of this team in a way that fans should, right? I always am reminding him, like, hey, man, look, I just don't know if anybody's really good. Like, I think the Rams are definitely good, and they're in the NFC. They're not your problem right now. Every one of those teams on the AFC side of things has its ups and downs, its arguments for why the Patriots are for real, and the things that might make you hesitate a little bit about how they're going to look in January. So I really do think that even dropping one of those games, the Chiefs should be in an okay spot. Now, maybe if it is that Chargers game, and then you're talking about a huge tiebreaker when you've already lost the first half, maybe that ends up being one that's actually essentially a playoff game. But even with the AFC West now feeling like it's something we don't even have to really pay that close of attention to, we can just watch the wild card game and figure out their path there. I do think they could probably drop one along the way. Obviously, it's a very good thing that one wasn't yesterday, because we would not be having this conversation right now if that would have gone slightly differently. And of course, they needed about 68 minutes, I think, to lock that one up.
Yeah, if they find a way to win the AFC West at this point on Christmas Day, I think the Broncos fans might go to Power and Light with pitchforks and just
yes.
start fist fighting Kansas Citians.
Yes.
Talking about the game yesterday, Most handoffs in Kareem Hunt's career. Is that deliberate? They ran a ton of plays, so yes. We don't like they still threw the ball 50 times. Yes. What's your take on that?
I think you got there. I think. Look, you're gonna run. You're gonna run 90 whatever plays. You're gonna hand the ball off a lot of times. But that to me is just a way to begin, honestly, praising Kareem Hunt for what he has done in this game and really what he's done for the last year and a half or whatever it's been since Isaiah Pacheco was hurt early last year. It has been a truly unlikely run that we don't see in the NFL all that often, not just because of how his time in Kansas City ended the first time and the idea of like the team splitting from a running back they really invested in, and then he comes back and has another chance to do anything. That alone is unlikely. But what Kareem Hunt has done with Pacheco sidelined again and with no other running backs on the active roster who the Chiefs seem to really want to hand the ball to, you get a few handoffs to Clyde Edwards-Helaire because somebody's got to touch it. You get one Breshad Smith carry this week after none last week, and you know, he clearly has a role in the offense, but it's not a guy that's going to take 10 carries away off of Kareem Hunt's plate. It has been a remarkable thing for Kareem Hunt at his age, at this stage in his career, in his second act with the Chiefs, to take 30 carries and to be able to be essentially almost exactly as efficient and as productive as Jonathan Taylor was, which is also a testament to the Chiefs defense, of course, but that double-sided coin, I think I said that last week, all coins are double-sided, but the two sides of that coin of both the Chiefs running game and how they limited the Colts running game, it's an incredibly important part of the story.
It's the defense holding them the way they held them. I think that game had a lot of opportunities to get away from them, and the defense absolutely bailed them out, as they've done so many times this year. That was, to me, as impressive as any performance defensively they've had all season, and they've had a lot of them, but they have no chance. The Colts could have dug that knife in if it weren't for great play from the defense.
And it feels like the Broncos game where you say, you know, oh, well, you know, it was good until that last play and then they broke. The Colts had several chances to have one of those back-breaking plays. And this week, the Chiefs defense did not fold. They did not break. Going through, and look, like we know, the Chiefs defense doesn't create a lot of turnovers. It's kind of like a weird side effect of whatever that unit is, and they talk about it in pressers, the players know, the coaches know, the media knows. It's just like it feels like a weird blip of, I don't know if it's how they work philosophically, if it's the players that they target, whatever. They don't create a lot of turnovers. The next closest thing you can do to creating a turnover is a 3-and-out, and a 3-and-out, and a 3-and-out, and a 3-and-out, and that is the actual play-by-play log of the fourth quarter and overtime. Look, guys, I still think this Chiefs pass rush is missing like a pretty good squeeze of juice. I would like for there to be a little bit more that comes from the four-man pass rush. I would like to have a little more faith in the defensive end rotation. Like, I still think there's room for them to improve. And we have seen guys like George Karlaftis have even better games later in the season. So I'm holding out some hope that he is going to continue to kind of build on. He's been productive, but he hasn't been dominant, right? And Chris Jones, a good time for a great game from Chris Jones yesterday. Hilarious that Daniel Jones did not take a sack. This was a Chris Jones effort many times, forcing Daniel Jones to speed up to miss one wide open completion that I think would have moved the chains at the time. All that to say, though, you're absolutely right. Even without a pass rush that is typically the kind of thing you can build a really, really good defense around, the Chiefs end up having a nearly flawless final four drives in absolute crunch time. And the Chiefs offense did not take advantage of every one of those opportunities. They took advantage of enough of those opportunities yesterday, but the defense just kept giving them chances. Again, I think they deserve credit for doing that against Denver. The offense couldn't capitalize against Indy yesterday. The defense saves the Chiefs some early to just keep it within striking distance. And then at the end, just an absolutely smothering unit.
Yeah, comical timing after the game for the roster move that was made.
Yeah.
About 2.5 hours after Kareem Hunt takes the most handoffs in his career, they're going to go sign a running back because he might need to sleep in today. He might not be feeling well. What do you make of that? What role is Damian Pierce going to play in the offense? Is this something that we could see on Thursday? And is this something because, you know, does that mean bad news for Pacheco? What's your stance on that?
Well, I mean, there are now, I guess we haven't seen them officially sign with the practice squad, so I guess we don't know this for sure. But if he signs with the practice squad and it's not Clyde or Carson Steele in the corresponding move, they'll have three running backs on the practice squad plus four on the active roster right now. That, I think, is a pretty good sign of where things are at in terms of just throwing numbers at it. I do like the Pierce addition. I think he ends up having the upside that right now, like, a guy like Clyde doesn't have. Clyde kind of gives you a floor of, like, he knows the offense, he knows the protections, and maybe he can have some usefulness for you in a pinch like that. I don't think it's necessarily reflective of Pacheco. I think it's probably more of realizing, like, okay, we're not going to have a lot more opportunities to have guys who have shown NFL caliber skills at the running back position. And I'm excited about the Pierce signing.
Yeah, it'll be maybe nothing, but maybe a little something, I think. So here's why I don't think it could be much, is because you're playing the Cowboys in a couple of days. The Cowboys are really, really interesting because they have over three. We can all make fun of Jerry Jones, but over a 3-week stretch, the defense we saw then versus now before the trade deadline and some injuries back is a totally different team. We already knew their offense was great, and their offense is still great. Going on the road there on a short week when they just got, you know, they're back-to-back at home. Like, this is a pretty dangerous game and a really interesting matchup because it's honestly not that different from the Colts.
No, I think you're right there. And again, the idea that, like, okay, well, here's this super dangerous offense, and again, a version of the defense that hasn't been good or wasn't good early in the year as we saw those pieces coming together. That game against Philly was interesting. I think, funnily enough, Philly was giving the football away and missing opportunities of their own. And if that sounds familiar, let me know. That I think that's kind of the standard right now, where I really do think that not just the Chiefs. I think that there are probably 15 teams or so in the league right now where if you said, hey, they're going to go out there and they're going to play a clean game, they're not going to make a bunch of backbreaking mistakes, they'll take most of the points in front of them, this team is going out there and playing a neutral opponent. Either 15 teams whose A games are probably Super Bowl winning games, because there is so much of that up and down throughout the league. And the Cowboys are, of course, one of those teams that has relatively high ceilings, very low floors. And so, yeah, I was allergic to the Chiefs running back rotation because I was about to sneeze mid Damian Pierce answer. But I don't expect that we'll probably see him in Dallas unless there's a real issue on the injury front. But I do think it makes sense to try to add a little bit of burst to that room, as we talked about, you know, around the deadline and everything. Of course, the Cowboys also on the short turnaround. But yeah, the Chiefs offense playing whatever 95, 96 plays. And I was going to get the number for Travis Kelce. I think he ended up with like 80 some snaps in this game. Those guys are having to travel to Dallas to do this on the short week on the holiday. It's not a good draw for anybody. The short week, the short turnaround is always hard. Of course, the Chiefs are going to have a similar one, the exact same really, for Christmas in about a month from tomorrow. In fact, look at that. Look at the holiday season. It hasn't felt like it around here because it's football season.
You know, I have not thought about that. With all of these games that they've got to win, I've forgotten about how brutal the actual schedule of days is in the holiday season.
You have to survive the Thanksgiving game and then enjoy your extra few days, and then you've got to survive the Broncos on Christmas and then enjoy your extra few days. It is a really, really tough – it's a tough draw that I don't know. This is a whole other longer thing. Like, I understand that the Chiefs are kind of digging out Christmas, being like the Christmas team at this pace, and I understand that. Having them double up on two Thursday games really late in the season, both on, of course, major holidays, isn't how I would have drawn it up, but that's because I'm working, you know? So not my decision, of course, but yeah, this would have been a nice week for the Chiefs to maybe have a 10-day layoff instead of a 4-day layoff, because today is Thursday on their schedule right now, right? You have absolutely no time to lick your wounds. Not only for the players, but like the training staff right now has to be, you are also playing on absolute empty because you have very little time to make sure that your old superstars like Chris Jones and Travis Kelce are ready to go in Dallas on Thanksgiving.
Josh, settle the debate for us we had earlier in the show. If Patrick Mahomes is like a hot, flashy sports car, what is Kareem Hunt in terms of automobiles?
a 1998 Honda Accord, I think. That was my now wife's car when we met. I think it was maybe 96. I don't know. It was old, and it, you know, had a million miles on it, and you can just replace one or two parts every once in a while and then get another 2 years out of it. So yeah, I lean Accord there, I think.
I went 2001-ish Ford Taurus. TJ,
that's great.
It's an F-150 with crank windows, I think. It takes a while to warm up, but once it gets going, you can't stop it.
Yeah. And it's not, I don't know what you guys drive, so this is dangerous. It's not one of those big oversized trucks that you drive, that, you know, the pristine truck that's in the parking lot. It's like, no. This truck has been in the fields. There is mud and rust on this thing that is older than the driver is.
Yeah. He's old reliable right now, and yes, man, you're glad they have him, and it's 3 yards in a cloud of dust, which if they try it again against Dallas is probably what it'll be. But maybe that's the formula. Maybe that's the ticket if the defense continues to play that way. You'll hear the game, of course, Thanksgiving Day on the Chiefs Radio Network, right here on our Odyssey family of stations. You'll hear Josh before and after the game, pre and post game host there. We appreciate it. Enjoy the short week here. We'll all be working Thursday.
Yeah, happy holidays to you guys. Happy Thanksgiving. I hope we can continue to be thankful for maybe 2 wins in a row this time next week.
All right, TJ, let's talk a little college hoops. We got to the Shockers there briefly with Paul Mills in the first hour. If you missed any of that, you can jump on the Odyssey app and go back and listen. KU plays today, 2:30, I think it is. They start that tournament against Notre Dame. I actually think this is a really interesting. I know Darren Peterson's not going to play. Shrey Islada told us last week he wasn't going to, and that after Vegas would be kind of the point to look at. So this is an interesting tournament schedule, this Vegas thing, right? This is the one we've been excited about. It's unfortunate that Peterson will be there, but we know good teams are there, right? I believe the games against Notre Dame, Syracuse, and UConn are locked in. Is that right? And then there's one other game that they'll play, or maybe even two other games that they're going to play. They're going to play a ton of games. All these teams are going to be good. This will be a really useful gauge for us on KU minus Darren Peterson and how good they might be.
Yeah, the UConn game is a home game. That's not a part of the tournament. They're coming back to Lawrence for that one. But I think it's just Notre Dame and Syracuse that they're going to play.
I thought that was still a part of it. You're right. Okay.
Yeah, that's a home and home. They played that. They started that series a little bit ago. So. But yeah, I think it's fun in the fact of Notre Dame isn't a basketball power by any means, and neither Syracuse, as we talked about with Shreyas when we had him on the show last. But I think the fact of what we've seen, I mean, you're not going to have Darren Peterson. Is this team good enough to go get a Power 5 win without Peterson? But that's, we haven't seen it yet. Like, this is what we're going to learn. Like, that's what we're going to figure out right now.
Yeah, look, I don't know how good Notre Dame or Syracuse are this year. I have no idea. I don't think we have a line on that game yet, at least that I've seen. So I don't know what not that in college.
It's in like 6 hours. We got to figure it out.
You know, in college basketball, I don't think that tells us as much early in the year, though, as some other sports. So, look, yeah, I would expect them to go beat Notre Dame. And maybe I'd expect them to go beat Syracuse. Again, I say that. I don't know anything about either one of those teams. Couldn't tell you one player.
They should beat both. There's lines for both games, Jacob. Get a grip. KU's favored by 5.5 over Notre Dame and 4.5 over Syracuse.
Okay, so close. So coin flip games. I mean, this at this point in college basketball with those lines, they're coin flip games. And I think that they ought to win those games, even without Peterson. They have to be able to do this because
if they don't, I'll put this claim out into the world. If they don't go 2-0, then there will be a little bit of panic.
Because
there'll be a little bit of stress.
Because the reality is, if Peterson's dealing with a hamstring, the chances of it flaring back up are more than zero. Like these kinds of soft tissue issues are injuries are issues, and they are being as cautious as they can possibly be with it, to a frustrating point for fans, I know, but that's why they don't want it to be a problem when they get into Big 12 play. They want to turn him loose. You don't think Bill Self wants to turn him loose? Nope. So we'll see what they can do without him. And again, like, for everybody else on the roster to chisel out roles or for them to get a feel for things, because we know what Peterson's going to be when he gets there. He's going to control the ball. He's going to take a bunch of shots, as he should. So now everybody else has got to figure out, like, what are you doing here? Like, what's your role? What's the plan for you?
I think that they're starting to get there. And I think that we saw that against Duke. And I think that's why everybody felt so positive after the Duke loss, is the fact of, you know, not the fact that they, I mean, they lost by double digits. They didn't, I don't even think they covered the spread. But the fact of watching that game made you have a feel of like, okay, well, Flory understands what he can be on this team. And it seems like Jaden Dawson is figuring out what he should be on this team. And everybody else kind of is filling in the pieces. And I think that that's what is so important about these early games without Darren Peterson. And that's why I think that this tournament will be a really big deal to see, will it look like eight talented basketball players on the court together, or will it look like a basketball?
Yeah, and then they're going to get better as the time goes, and they're favored for a reason. So for me, I'm actually pretty excited about the opportunity here. I know people want to see Peterson. I want to see Peterson too, but I also want to live in reality. And the reality is, it's like Peterson and a bunch of guys that don't know what they're doing or what their roles are is not going to be enough to win the Big 12, to win to, like, they're going to have both. So let's see that part work on itself. K-State, TJ, I know it was Friday night football for you guys and craziness. I had so much fun with that K-State Nebraska game. I don't even know how many eyes were on it. It was an unbelievably close game. They lose by a point to Nebraska. Nebraska actually they look pretty good. I told you guys, like, America's going to fall in love with it. It looks like a bunch of farmers out there, and they just kind of play a wild and crazy frenetic basketball that I do think people are going to like. Of course, Hoiberg's there, and we know he's a great coach. But Nebraska wins it at the free throw line. Anyway, it's another game in the high, in the mid to high 80s. Like,
it's kind of comical that our take of K-State needs to score 100 to win every game, like, they've been kind of teetering that. Like, if they scored, you know, if they got to 90, they win that game. Like, that's just what they're going to have to do.
I will take it in a sport where the really good teams typically don't live that high offensively. Like, I will gladly welcome a wild and crazy offensive
NBA games.
Yeah, they'll be fun. And I do, again, I think you can see K-State as a tournament team, as a top hat, like it's looking there. And I know they didn't get it done against Nebraska, who I believe owns the longest win streak in college basketball at the moment. Nebraska was good. I don't know how good Indiana is. That's their next test, is a true road game. I love this schedule for K-State. They have these neutral court games. Now they have to go on the road tomorrow in a true road game to Bloomington. And that's great before they get to come back home. These are the challenges that'll make this team better. They have game against Creighton coming up out of conference, South Dakota, like this, Seton Hall. This is a fun schedule, and at Indiana should be fun. Indiana will be talented if nothing else, but I think we're on the right track with the Cats.
Yeah, the schedule's awesome, considering the fact that in the past, the schedule has been full of Mississippi Valley states. Right. And that's what we've talked about, is that this is the only real top 100 games that they played were the tournaments that they played in Thanksgiving. And the last year, that was the, I don't even know what it was, the tournament they played in, some rinky-dink tournament that, like, the next best team was George Washington, I think. And then they dropped a game to Liberty in that tournament or something like that.
They don't even play one unless you count the Hall of Fame Classic.
That's what it was. Yeah, that was theirs. And so, I like it. I think that the fact that they're going to be a little tested when they get to conference play, and not tested in the fact that they were last year where they didn't look good going into conference play. It's more so the fact of, they're finding out who this team is. And I think that, like,
I'm liking what we're finding out.
It should be a tournament team. I think that's the baseline that we'll say, is that it should be a tournament team.
I'm liking what we're finding out. All right. We talked Shockers with Paul Mills. Again, go back and we'll have more on the Shockers because they don't play till Wednesday. So I have plenty of time to dig into what they did this weekend and what to look forward to. KU football is the other thing that we got to get to that we haven't intentionally, TJ. It was the least interesting thing to me that happened this weekend.
They're at the point, I tell people this all the time, that, like, K-State football and their struggles is such a story to follow because of how far they've fallen from grace this season and how they've been handling it with everything that's going wrong. KU football is just in the bad gray area where it's like they're just good enough where it's not that big of a deal, and they're just bad enough that it's also not that big of a deal. And that's where they're living right now.
I fear it. I fear it for KU. I do, because now we are about to enter the non-Jalen Daniels era for Lance Leipold. And I don't follow the recruiting stuff as closely as you and other, like, you guys have more energy for it than I do. But I don't know what the bright light on the horizon is right now.
They've got Isaiah Marshall, and he's gotten some reps this year. He's not going to be Jalen Daniels, and so I think that it's more about what
in total. And I know they've got some good recruits, but
they're going to be young. I mean,
really going to be willing to give those guys a chance? It's going to take probably, and this could happen. It's going to take an offseason of big time portal additions.
It's going to be what they did a year ago. They had literally no players coming back, basically, except Jalen Daniels for the most part.
And now it's not Hyshaw, who didn't, you know, play the role that we thought he would.
I mean, they filled the roster. I mean, of their, I bet that it's 70% transfers that they brought in because
it's going to have to be. It's just how good are they?
I'm telling you, that's what it was this year. And then they're going to go do it again. And that was the thing that was always kind of like, early season KU, whenever we liked what we saw from them, is just like, oh, this was supposed to kind of be the bridge year. And it's like, they might be okay. And now it's like, okay, it probably was the bridge year, actually, now that we're looking at how it's turning out to be. And so I think that it's going to be interesting of where they go from here, because like it's going to go one of two ways. And the good part about it is that it can go one of two ways. I think in the old days is that it probably only had one real way of going. Outside of relying on a lot of freshmen to play a lot of roles. So I think that they're going to have to go portaling and see what they can get.
Yeah, they still have one to play. They still do have a chance to make a bowl. They're going to be at home this weekend. We saw that Utah's vulnerable. If a team's going to run the ball on them, maybe K-State unlocked something for them. How cool would that be? But it's going to be...
Jacob's been saying that Jalen Daniels has been due for a legacy game since September. And so
last week was the first time I said that, I think. And maybe that is legacy. I don't remember saying that. And legacy,
you,
I don't
you
know.
You said it at least three times about okay, this. Well, this is going to be the Jalen Daniels Superman game.
Is it? No, I said he's been Superman for them this year. I'll stand by
that. Every time that we make a pick, Jalen Daniels can be Superman in this game.
Superman, but that's the legacy. It's not enough. The legacy is it's not enough.
I love Jalen Daniels, and if he can go out, I really don't want to see him go out having lost 5 of 6.
I know, which would suck. But if we're talking about legacy, that's kind of it, right? That's at least the last couple of years.
Like, Jalen Daniels might legitimately be a top three quarterback in KU history.
I would defer on that. I'm not familiar enough with.
He's got to be.
70s KU football.
Looking at KU football's history, Todd Reesing is number one.
Recent history, I don't know though. I'd have to defer to people on that. But he's going to be up there. He's a good player, but the legacy is that it's never been good enough for them.
I'm not getting on here and saying it's time to get the new quarterback, because shocker, people on social media are saying that as well.
Was a time coming off of injury where he played terrible.
Oh, he didn't play good last year.
But then he did halfway through the year, and he's been fine.
Yes.
But again, like, careful what you wish for, because you're probably not replacing him with somebody as good 100%. As him.
People are insane.
I know. College football is a wild animal. It is. All right, that'll do it for us. You got Monday Night Football tonight. You can tune in right here on KFH 97.5 1240 at 6 to hear play-by-play NFL action. Panthers out west taking on the 49ers. Listen to KFHradio.com, the free Odyssey app as well. We'll be back. We'll react to that and spend a little more time on some of the topics we had to brush through a bit, as we always do on a Monday tomorrow. We'll have Wyatt Thompson in. Have some thoughts on the Chris Klieman post-game conference. It'll be an interesting conversation with Wyatt Thompson. I'll ask Wyatt straight up. He's a K-State guy. Am I being unfair with K-State fans and their expectations being too high? Maybe I am. But we'll discuss it. We'll have college basketball to talk through as well.
Afternoon college hoops. I'm going to sit my butt on the couch on my day off and watch KU's best.
I'm very curious about KU today and in Vegas. I think this is a pretty interesting opportunity. May not be a good one, but it'll be an interesting one nonetheless. All right. For Max, for TJ, thanks to Paul Mills for stopping by. If you missed anything, go back and listen on the Odyssey app. We'll see you tomorrow.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcasts.